And a very good morning to you. John Fradgley with you for the next half an hour here on 4CRB for the law and you. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice. All you need to do is get on that telephone. 5520888 is our number. That's 5520888. Don't forget, south of the Tweed River, put 07 in front of our number. And we do, of course, have our email address, talkback@4crb.com, where you can send an emailed question, which we will deal with the week following receipt of your query. So that's talkback@4crb.com. But otherwise, 5520888. And our first caller is on the line this morning as we say good morning to Frederick. G'day, Frederick. How are you today?
Good, good. Thanks very much.
How can I help you?
Basically, I wonder if you talk a little bit generally about testamentary trust.
Yes. So what exactly would you like to know about testamentary trust, Frederick?
There's a lot of information about wills and power of attorney, but testamentary trust was not very touched very much yet.
Yes.
In the discussion, huh?
Yes.
But maybe it's a subject very long. Mm. Basically, you're just explaining a little bit the advantages to a will.
Yes. Well, testamentary trusts are becoming increasingly popular in terms of estate planning as testators, people making their wills, become increasingly concerned about the financial welfare of their children going forward or their spouse going forward. And they are also becoming increasingly popular in situations where you may have a second marriage or third marriage and children of previous relationships. So basically, the major advantages of them, Frederick, are that the assets that are placed into the testamentary trust under the terms of the will do not become the assets of a beneficiary, but they are held by a trustee of that testamentary trust. And that means that if the trust is structured correctly under the current law, it may be that the assets are not capable of being attacked under family court proceedings for a property settlement. So if you have a child who's got a shaky marriage and you're worried about protecting the assets going forward for your child and grandchildren, then a testamentary trust can be a useful vehicle. Equally, if you have a child who is a bankrupt or who is a spendthrift and you're worried that they're just going to basically blow everything you give them within a very short space of time, then the use of a testamentary trust can be very useful because it basically will tie the money up in a trust so that someone who is financially responsible is able to pay money out as required to that nominated beneficiary so that all the money doesn't basically get wasted. The other thing that is of an advantage but less so is the tax advantages in a testamentary trust, where if, for example, a husband makes a will which has a testamentary trust in it, leaving his assets to that testamentary trust under which his wife and children are the beneficiaries and the children are infants, then a child beneficiary, an infant beneficiary of a testamentary trust, gets the same tax treatment as an ordinary adult, unlike a normal family trust, where if you put your assets into a family trust, an infant can only receive $416 before they're taxed at the top marginal rate, whereas under a testamentary trust, they get treated exactly the same as any other taxpayer. So that would mean that they could receive, with the low income threshold, up to about $20,000 of income, which would be tax-free. So the obvious advantages of that are these, that if you pass away and you leave a wife and two children who are infants, and the wife has, or there's an income of about $60,000 coming from your assets following your passing, through the use of the testamentary trust, you could allocate $20,000 of income to the wife, $20,000 of income to each of the two children, and there would be effectively little, if any, tax payable, which would obviously be a considerable financial advantage to a widow having lost her husband and having two small children. Now, the one thing people need to understand about testamentary trusts is that they do not come into existence until you pass away. So it's exactly the same as your will. Your will has no effect until you die. It's a document that sits dormant. And the testamentary trusts within the will, like your will, remain dormant until there is a trigger event. And, of course, that trigger event is your passing. All right, yeah. Then?
Yeah, so but setting up, it would be much more expensive than a will. And then there is monitoring.
Well, certainly establishing a testamentary trust is more expensive than doing a simple will. So, you know, you might be looking at $250 to $300 to do a simple will, whereas to do a will incorporating a testamentary trust, you might be looking at $2,000 to $2,500. So it is considerably more expensive. However, I explain it to clients like this. It's basically a one-off insurance premium to ensure that your assets will be protected and dealt with how you want them to be dealt with going forward. So you insure your house, you insure your car every year, you pay substantial premiums every year to make sure that those assets are protected, and we pay those premiums in the hope that we'll never have to claim on them. But this is a one-off premium to basically protect all of your assets for the future. So to that extent, it is certainly, in my opinion, a premium well worth paying. The cost of maintaining them is not significant. It's no different to doing an ordinary tax return for a company or for an inter vivos trust. So it's not a significant expense going forward. All right, but we'll have to leave it there, Frederick. We've got a couple more callers on the line.
Thank you very much.
All the best. Bye now. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 13 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Bridget. G'day, Bridget. How are you today?
Oh, good, thank you. I'm actually ringing for somebody now. He was 8 years married. They had no children. They live in Queensland. He left the army before they actually were married. He was in the army 23 years. They've been separated now 2 years. The house has been sold, and the money is with an independent solicitor, and he is wondering how long he has, and she's refusing to go into mediation, and the money's, and he's wondering how long he has to wait till it has to get sorted without going to a lawyer and having cost on his side.
Right, okay. Well, look, unfortunately, so he's divorced now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if his spouse is refusing to cooperate in relation to the settlement, you say that 2 years have passed?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And the spouse has not brought an application for property settlement?
The gentleman that I know.
No, the other party. The
No, she's just waiting. She's waiting for him to get annoyed and either spend his money on a solicitor or give up altogether, which he's done in a previous marriage.
Right. Well, what was the... Who owned the house? Was it owned by him solely or was it owned by him as jointly?
It was owned by him solely, but it became... they both were on the mortgage when they had a mortgage on it.
Hmm. Okay, well, look, unfortunately, Bridget, I don't think he's going to have any option but to get some legal advice. Whereabouts does he live? Which city?
He's on the Gold Coast,
okay, right. Well, look, what I would suggest then would be to for him to go to the My Community Legal Centre, which is down at Robina. Which part of the Gold Coast is he on?
Oh, he'd be fine going there.
Okay, so on a Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8:30 in the Gold Coast City Council's Robina Community Centre, they provide free legal advice to people who go in. Now, I would recommend that you call this number. Have you got a pen handy?
Yes, I have, yes.
So if you call 0423 466 286.
Yes.
Just to confirm that they're operating on Thursday evening. On the Thursday evening, he's intending to go, and they can give an outline of the sort of advice that he needs so that they might be able to tell him if there's going to be a lawyer there, a family lawyer who's going to be able to assist. Because what needs to be gone into is the circumstances under which the money were put into was put into this independent lawyer's trust account, etc. Because normally you've got 12 months from the date of divorce to file an application for property settlement, and if you fail to do so, then that's the end of it. So if the house was in his name and the net proceeds of sale after discharge of the mortgage is still held there, then I would say on the face of it that he's entitled to those funds if she's failed to bring an application. But obviously it's never as simple as that, Bridget, so that's why I'm recommending that he give that number a call and organise to go in and see one of the lawyers at the Robina Community Legal Centre, or the My Community Legal, it's now called, and they would be able to help. And that's in the Gold Coast City Council's Robina Community Centre, which is on the western side from the shopping centre.
Yep. Oh, that's wonderful, right. John. Thank you very much for
that. No trouble at all, Bridget. Okay. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. It's just come up to 17 minutes past 9, past 10, south of the Tweed. And we say a very good morning to Glenda. G'day, Glenda. How are you today?
Oh, hello, yes, John. I'm fine, thank you. I don't know whether you're going to be able to help me. It's an insurance situation.
Right.
I've had the same insurance company for years and years and years, and about 6 years ago, the roof had to be replaced because of hail damage, which was fine. That was all done. Now I've had hail damage again since the October hail that we had, and the insurance company's saying that it wasn't installed properly in the first place under Australian regulations or whatever. Therefore, they want to pay me out instead of replacing it.
So what they're saying is that the... so was it your insurance company that organised the last repair?
Yes.
So they got the contractor to do it?
Yes.
So they're now saying, well, that contractor didn't do it correctly, so we're going to pay you out rather than fix the damage.
Yes.
And they want you to get it fixed.
Oh, well, I imagine so, or otherwise do nothing about it at all, because it's not leaking, so, but it's just hail damage.
Right.
They're prepared to, the solar hot water system needs replacing, and they're prepared to do that, but they're not prepared to do the roof. So I don't know whether that's a good situation just to take the money and get it done myself, or take the money and not do anything, or insist that they replace the roof if it's not done under Australian standards.
Yes, well, given that they were the ones that originally engaged the contractor who did the repairs, it seems to me to be a bit rich that they're now saying that that they're not prepared to carry out the repairs again and they just simply want to pay you out. So I would be, I was just taking a look here to see if I could find the number for the insurance ombudsman, but I think it's the Commonwealth. Yes, the Commonwealth Ombudsman. I'll just give you a number that you can take down. So their number, it's the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, my apologies, and that includes insurance, and their number is 1-800- 931-678.
678.
Yeah, okay. So I would give them a call and just have a chat to them in relation to it. I mean, obviously, a lot will depend on the terms of the insurance policy, Glenda. And as you probably know, policy documents are written in very legalistic ways, in a very legalistic language, and they're often extremely difficult to understand. And interpretation of these is sometimes difficult, but if you were to contact that number that I've specified and just give them, you can then talk to them about who the insurance company is and what the issues are, etc., and I'm sure that they would be able to assist you in navigating your way through that problem.
Okay, lovely. Thank you, John. We'll take it from there and see what happens.
Okay, Glenda, the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 20 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. Our telephone number is 55208888 if you have a question or a query this morning. That's 55208888. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Earlhaven 1, 2 and 3 bedroom independent living units are from $170,000.
To inspect us, please call me, Shelley, on 55783433.
Our sponsor, Earlhaven, Lawrence Drive, Narang. Earlhaven.com.au.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number is 55208888. That number is 55208888. Presently, there are no callers online, so if you have a question or a query and would like it answered this morning, get on that phone right now, 55208888. One of the things that I was going to talk about last week, and while talking about last week's program, thank you to the many people who called in and made for such an interesting program. And one of the subjects I was trying to get to but couldn't because of the number of calls related to issues surrounding legal capacity. And this is increasingly becoming an issue in not only the area of wills and powers of attorney, but also just in relation to legal documents generally. We've just this week had a query raised with our office in relation to a contract that has been signed by someone that has claimed lacks capacity, and therefore whether it is possible to get out of the contract, the legal obligations under that contract, because the person entering into the contract at the time lacked the requisite legal capacity to understand the nature and effect of the document being signed. So just from that and from the many instances these days where issues of capacity are raised in a whole array of areas in relation to, not just in relation to wills and powers of attorney, but also business generally, it's becoming increasingly important to be able to assess capacity. And we have developed a very detailed letter which we send to medical practitioners when we are wanting to get a report in relation to a person's capacity, if there is any doubt about it, because it's extremely important that the report you get is not just a one-liner, which quite often reports that you get from doctors are. They simply say, I've examined Mr. Brown today and I'm satisfied that he has legal capacity. What you need is to have written a letter which addresses or turns the mind of the doctor to all of the issues that need to be considered in relation to capacity, so that if it does become an issue going forward, you can point to the letter that was written to the doctor, which is quite detailed, saying these are the criteria we want you to assess against. And the report back from the doctor, if it says something to the effect, I thank you for your letter of whatever date, I've assessed Mr. Brown against those criteria and I'm satisfied that he has capacity, that is a very, very strong argument that the person did have capacity at the time. So this issue is arising in relation to wills, where people want to challenge a will saying that the testator didn't have capacity at the time the will was made, all sorts of issues. So there has been a very useful guideline issued by the Queensland Government just recently, in fact in November last year, on the guidelines for assessing decision-making capacity. So if anyone has a problem or with a relative or an issue in relation to that area, that is well worth looking at. But we have a couple of callers online. We'll say a very good morning to Jennifer. G'day, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
How can we help?
I live in New South Wales,
mm-hmm.
and my husband recently had a stroke and a blood clot, and he didn't have an enduring power of attorney. He's been married before, and so have I.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in his will, his son is the executor. He has three sons.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he has left, everything should happen to him, the house, the car, whatever's in the house, and half the money and half to his children.
Mm-hmm.
I had to apply, because my husband didn't have power of attorney, I had to apply to the guardianship board
mm-hmm.
to be his financial manager. And unfortunately, I didn't understand him on the phone and I didn't get the guardianship through because I said the wrong thing.
Right, okay.
How do I go? Can I go, because I've got to save all these receipts and write everything up,
hmm.
how do I do, can I get empowering enduring power of attorney.
Does your husband still have capacity?
So I'd say 50%, to be honest.
All right. Well, what I think I would do first, Jennifer, is I would have... is he still in hospital or is he out of hospital now?
Oh, no, he's here. They want to put him in a nursing home, but I brought him home and he just improved in leaps and bounds.
Right, okay. Well, what I would suggest you do when next you're going to your doctor, you need to have your doctor assess your husband as to whether he has the legal capacity to understand the nature and effect of an enduring power of attorney.
I was just going to write this down because it's very important what you're telling me. It's very important. Yeah?
Yeah, so if you have the doctor assess your husband as to whether he has legal capacity to make an enduring power of attorney. Do you have a family solicitor who's previously looked after these issues for you, wills and things of that nature?
Yes, I have.
All right, because it would probably be advisable to engage the solicitor to assist. I was just talking a moment ago about the letter that our office writes to doctors when we're looking for an assessment of capacity to prepare a will or an enduring power of attorney where capacity might be an issue. And it's quite surprising how people have capacity, despite the fact that as a layman you may not think they do when they're assessed against the legal criteria. So if you have your lawyer prepare a letter to the doctor, there's a very useful letter precedent of a letter that was prepared by Lexon, which is the professional indemnity insurer for lawyers in Queensland. So I'm sure there'd be something similar in New South Wales, and they could write to the doctor to get the report. And if the report comes back and says, yes, your husband does have a capacity, then you can do the lawyer do up the enduring power of attorney. If they come back and say, no, he doesn't have a capacity, then it may be necessary for you to once again apply to the New South Wales guardianship body to be approved as your husband's guardian.
Okay.
So you would be, I think from memory in New South Wales, it's administrator for financial matters and it's guardian for health matters. But if you speak to your lawyer, they'll certainly be able to assist you with all of those things.
All right. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, no trouble, Jennifer. All the very best. Time on 4CRB, 28 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed, and probably our last caller for today. Good morning, Anne. How are you today? Hello, Anne. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. How can we help?
Look, I have twins that nearly 16. I've invested a lot of money for them, and it's all in their name. They've been paying tax on it and that. So I've got no issue when they get it. But I'm just thinking, how can I advise them when they turn 18 to protect the money that they will have when they say they have a relationship and it ends in a divorce or something. I would prefer to have this money protected for them.
Yes. So what they could do when they turn 18, you could consent because they won't be able to legally do anything with the money until then. But what you could look at doing is setting up a discretionary trust for them. And I would suggest that you could probably just use one trust rather than using two. And they would be beneficiaries of that trust along with their children. I would get some legal advice in relation to setting that up. And then when they turn 18, the money would be paid out to them. You could then establish the trust and then they could gift their money into that trust. So that going forward, the money would be protected for them. There would be a certain period of time during which the gifting of the funds might be capable of being clawed back if there was a family law dispute or a breakup of a relationship. But hopefully when they just turn 18, they're not going to be in a relationship at that time, or not one that would be a de facto relationship or a marriage. And so therefore, the sooner that happens and the money goes into the trust, the sooner it will be afforded the protection that that trust will provide.
That's the money side. This is actually, I've developed a share portfolio for each of them.
Well, same thing. The only issue there, though, of course, is that there might potentially be capital gains tax payable if the shares have gone up in value. So you would be well advised to get some advice from a financial planner in relation to that, because a lot will depend on how the shares are presently held. I assume they're presently held in your name?
They're in my name for them in trust, but
yep.
Ever since they've been paying, I've got them their individual tax numbers, and they have actually been paying tax on that since they were 11 months old.
Yes, okay. So, well, look,
so there'll be no capital gains tax.
Okay, all right. Well, what I would suggest you do is see a financial advisor. You'll need to see a financial advisor and your lawyer just to make sure that the transition from the current trust across to any newly established trust is not going to create any issues. But we'll have to leave it there, Anne. Unfortunately, we're just pressing up to the local news.
Okay, thank you.
All the very best. And thank you for all the calls that came in this morning, many and varied, and always make for a great program. I look forward to being back with you next week for another program of The Law and You. But until then, this is John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group saying goodbye and God bless.